Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at WashableSofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit WashableSofas.com today and save. That's WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
What began as a young woman's dream come true ended in a nightmare that would become internationally known in headlines, on the cover of tabloids, and broadcast in news shows. But the true story behind the punchline was even more horrifying than the media ever explained. This week's episode is Lorena Bobbitt, Part 1.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
This is a way to spend some time watching this documentary.
Dude, this was a hard one. This is one of, it was reminiscent of the OJ documentary.
Yes.
Just the callousness with which everyone spoke of abuse and sexual assault. Also, can we just say up top, early 90s daytime talk show hosts were the scum of the earth.
Fucking trash.
I remember
them. In particular.
Oh, Geraldo, scum of the earth.
Phil Donahue, not great. Jenny Jones, not great.
None of them were great. No. Uh-uh. Oprah, great.
Oh, for sure. Forever.
But everyone else, like, could not have been just salacious, teeing everybody up, encouraging arguments and fights. And it was all just so sexist and homophobic.
Completely. And Geraldo's was so bad, and I texted you because it popped in my head as I was watching the documentary. Of course, there's like archival footage of him, and it reminded me that I read an article summarizing his 1991 memoir that he published. It is some of the most disgusting prose. I've read American Psycho in seventh grade, and reading this as an adult, I was more horrified.
What does he talk about?
He talks about the women that he hit on and how he was like trying to sleep with everyone at work and that they like to fuck in the boiler room. And one of the lines is like, a hard dick knows no reason. It's just gross.
What? Geraldo? My God.
First of all, he looks gross with that mustache. And then second of all, you read it and it feels like the pages of the book would be oily and greasy and slimy and just disgusting because it's just so sexist and gross. He since has, obviously, when it came out, you know, he was perfectly fine with it in the 90s. Well, in 2017, 2018, a journalist found it and said, I think the title of the article is, I read Geraldo's disgusting memoir, so you don't have to. And of course, Geraldo came out and said, I regret deeply what I wrote and I didn't mean that and blah, blah. It's like, it's too late, man.
Yeah, you know. It's out there, buddy. Also, who wants to fuck in a boiler room? It's so hot.
Dirty. It's dank.
Just a lot of machinery and loud noises.
I imagine somebody down like taking to empty their slop bucket. Like, it's not private.
Oh, and then you get slop thrown on you in more ways than one. Geraldo slops all over you.
Oh, yeah. So disgusting. So, everyone's coverage of this. Also, I feel like people, you know, some people will say nowadays, oh, Saturday Night Live's not funny anymore. It was funnier in the 90s. It was not.
No.
First of all, Kate McKinnon was not on there.
True.
I watched Bombshell recently. I am in love with Kate McKinnon.
Well, she could be in love with you too.
I love her.
She's great.
And oh my gosh. But these sketches that were made about Lorena Bobbitt were not even, I'm like, I'm offended as a woman on one level, but I'm more offended as a comedian because they're not funny.
They're tasteless and just real low hanging fruit. And there were so many famous comics. Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg did stand up routines where jokes about her were in there. And those are people that are arguably extremely well respected. And I don't know, man, the 90s were a different time. Whoopi's, though, she did. Hers was more empowered. A lot of it in the documentary is kind of taken out of context. And then when they show you more clips, it's like, okay, she was actually very pro-woman in this whole situation. But Robin Williams is just doing this really
offensive accent.
And just, it's all just so low-hanging fruit. And the main, my blood was boiling watching this documentary because I just kept thinking, what if he had cut her clit off?
Yes.
Who's going to be laughing about
joking?
That? Who's going to be making jokes? And as she says time and time again and still says 25 years later, no one cared why I did it. They were all just concerned with, oh my God, she did the unthinkable. This is his manhood. This is everything to men. How could she dare? Instead of thinking, what would drive someone to those extremes?
Absolutely. It's funny you say that. And I think it's in the last episode. It's one of the women that works at the Bunny Ranch says they cut off 10,000 clits a day in some foreign countries and it never makes the news. One dick gets cut off and it's all anybody talked about for 2 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of the journalists that are interviewed in the documentary or a lot of the activists said, oh, journalists at the time would write these stories and the editors were male and they were like, we don't really like that angle.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really interested. But it was interesting to me just throughout the documentary, looking at it now with the, you know, obviously the more, I would hope we're all more evolved now lens. It wasn't just sexist as fuck what happened to her. It was incredibly racist. There was so many racial, anti-immigrant, xenophobic kind of overtones that you don't realize this poor woman was completely victimized since day one of knowing this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he, frankly, is a fucking racist.
I mean, he's complete trash.
When you watch him talk, you have no doubt. The type of language he used, it's like dog whistle coded. Like, he's obviously smart enough not to come straight out and say it, but then there's like messages that he sent and quotes of his from way back. And he, from day one, has had some white supremacist views.
Very much so. He would belittle her for her accent, make fun of the way she spoke. Threaten to deport her and use her immigration status to control her. It was absolutely disgusting. He's a huge sack of shit.
Yeah, he sucks.
And nothing about him in the documentary or anything I've read is redeeming at all. His family's complete trash, too.
They're such monsters.
Oh, total monsters. His brothers.
Bullies, shitheads.
Awful. They're all awful. The documentary we're talking about is aptly titled Lorena. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 4 parts. It's very good. This, again, is one of those stories that I very much remember when it happened, but I didn't know a ton about it. And now that I know so much about it, it's like Amanda Knox or any of those stories, you're like, the media chose an angle and went with it, and it was not at all the right angle.
They done did her dirty.
Mm, very.
Bad.
Very much bad. So. Yeah. So I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Lorena Bobbitt was born Lorena Gallo on October 30th, 1970 in Ecuador. At the age of 7, she moved with her family to Venezuela, where she was raised with a strict upbringing that included chaperone dates, no premarital sex, and a zero tolerance policy regarding abortion or divorce, according to the American Law and Legal Information Library. Lorena recalls in the documentary, Lorena, that her mother and father were hard workers. They didn't have a lot of money. Still, she says,
We were poor, but we were happy.
In Latin America, it is customary for girls to be thrown a quinceañera upon turning 15. The parties are notoriously lavish and celebrate the transition from childhood to becoming a young woman. Lorena's parents were not in a financial situation to throw a grand party, but Lorena was fine with that. What she really wanted was to travel, specifically to the United States.
This is one of those where you don't even know the trajectory your life's fixing to take.
Yeah.
You're a 15, 16-year-old girl thinking, I'll go to the U.S., I'll go to school, I'll live the dream. You have no idea what you're about to embark upon.
And that's something he preyed upon, too.
Oh, definitely.
Someone that was new to the country, didn't speak English, had very few friends or acquaintances.
A sheltered upbringing.
Yeah, her family was hundreds of miles away. When Lorena was 16 years old, she visited the United States for the first time, traveling to Washington, D.C. with her family. The vacation was magical, with the cherry blossoms in full bloom and a sense of excitement and longing unfamiliar to Lorena until now. Lorena recalled to the filmmakers that on the trip, she
fell in love with the United States and decided that was where I wanted to be. Have you ever been when the cherry blossoms were blooming in Washington?
I have not. The only time I've been was in January. It was for the Women's March after Trump was elected.
Oh, very nice.
And we went, though, to the monument and everything, and I bought a little souvenir planter of cherry blossoms, and they're currently still in my fridge. The seeds are being germinated.
Nice. Well, that's really cool.
They're probably not good now. They've been in my fridge for too long.
I don't know how plants work, but maybe.
I fucked up.
I killed the cherry blossoms.
I would love to go. I love cherry blossoms, and that's kind of a bucket list thing to see when they're in bloom. Have you been?
When I was in 10th grade, we did a high school field trip there, and it was in the spring, so it was when they were all blooming. Oh, it was so beautiful. It was such a nice trip.
Yeah.
So much fun. But
that's awesome.
They do a lot of establishing shots in the documentary, and I'm like, man, I want to go back to D.C.
My eighth grade, that D.C. was also the class trip until the year I was in eighth grade, and they changed it to San Antonio.
Oh, man. I mean, there's nothing wrong with San Antonio, but you and your family could feasibly go there.
Oh, wait. No, it wasn't San Antonio. I'm sorry. It was New Mexico.
Again, but that's a driving distance. You know what I mean? A family could theoretically go on a trip there.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherently wrong with New Mexico. It's just kind of close.
It was nice. It was fine. We went tubing down the white sands, the dunes and everything. And
that's fun.
It was cool. But I was like, oh, D.C., that's like a adult trip. That's a big thing to go do. And then they done changed it on us.
We went to D.C. and then we went to New York. No, we went to D.C., then Disney World, then New York.
Oh, Disney World would have been awesome.
They did the educational behind the scenes thing. So much
fun. Ooh, that would be fun.
We learned how to draw a Mickey. Anyway.
Oh, nice. A few years later, in 1987, Lorena moved to the United States after being granted a student visa. The Gallo's close friends, the Castros, lived in Virginia, and it was decided Lorena would live with them while attending Northern Virginia Community College. At school, she studied English as a Second Language, or ESL, among other classes. When Lorena arrived in the U.S., she spoke no English at all. In addition to the ESL classes, Lorena learned the language and about American culture from daytime soap operas, game shows, and popular sitcoms of the time, like Family Ties and Growing Pains. Before long, Lorena had a clear vision of her American dream and soon met a man that she believed embodied it.
It is so overwhelming to go to a country and not speak the language.
I can't imagine.
It's so brave. Also, I think everyone should be bilingual in America.
I would love to be. I've seen a lot of people have been doing Duolingo since they've got some downtime. Okay. And I have the app and I don't do it. I need to do it. What language are you doing? Spanish?
Spanish, yeah. Because I pretty much speak Spanish. So it's going into like phrases I don't know. I'm bad at like conjugating. But I mean, when we were in Spain, I was like having conversations with the taxi driver and stuff. I just speak. It's like broken. I always say I sound like a kindergartner or like a little kid who is like, I want to go to fair. You know, like I don't have all the articles and stuff right.
Yeah.
But it's been fun to practice. And I'll be like, sorry, is it okay if I do my Spanish? Because you have to talk into it. For Duolingo, and Paris is like, yeah, do whatever you want. So he'll be watching TV and I'm like, yo, estoy, whatever.
You got to go in the other room.
No, hell no. It's my house.
That's true. He should go in the other room.
That's right.
John Wayne Bobbitt describes himself as an ordinary guy from Niagara Falls, New York. He served in the military as a Marine. To make ends meet, John worked as a cab driver, a bar bouncer, and a construction worker, never bringing in much money. Growing up, John's father beat his mother repeatedly, to the point that his uncles would come over to retaliate, beating John's father in return. After enough of those instances, his father left the family, leaving John's mother to take care of the children alone. The family was incredibly poor and lived in what John described as
the ghetto. All right, John.
Yeah. Again, coded language. We see it right off the bat.
He's got a very interesting way of talking.
Mm-hmm. He's trash. He's completely.
He's
complete trash.
This is verbatim from his interview in the documentary. Watch it for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. John claims he was repeatedly beat up and his mother was raped by men that lived in the neighborhood. John told the makers of Lorena that he and his siblings were also sexually abused by a pedophile uncle who fed them alcohol and then molested them. Yeah, these are terrible things. He's an awful person, but it sucks that these things happened to him. It also probably led him into the life that he would later lead.
Yeah, I think he doesn't say, oh, because X, Y happened, but he's internalized it. And regarding the uncle, he says, me and some of my siblings, he kind of abused us. Anyway, we don't really talk about it. You know, it's almost like their family wasn't, they weren't taught to process the grief and the trauma. And then what happens is you continue the cycle.
Right. Yeah, for sure. When Lorena first met John Bobbitt, she was working as a manicurist at the Nail Sculptor, a salon owned by Jana Bassetti, a savvy businesswoman who would later become a confidant of Lorena's. Mrs. Castro, the family friend with whom Lorena was living, had two daughters, one younger and one older than Lorena. The sisters liked to party, despite their mother's extremely strict rules. Lorena would often go out with them, but remained quiet and reserved.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabay Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabay sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
One September evening in 1988, Lorena was out with the Castro sisters when the three women found themselves at a local club for men enlisted in the service. It was here that Lorena met John, or Lance Corporal John Wayne Bobbitt, as he was known at the time. John, 21, was serving in the U.S. Marines and was stationed in Quantico, Virginia. Lorena's long, dark hair and petite frame caught John's eye, with him recalling in a later interview,
"She was pretty. She had a cute accent."
Which he would later use against her.
Which he would. And you see the pictures of him in his Marine uniform, and there's something about a dude in a uniform. He looks very clean cut. He looks reasonable. You look at him and say, that is, you know, if you're coming to the U.S. and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what does all-American boy next door look like? And it would be him. He's got a little crew cut. He's, you know, clean shaven, got his little uniform on, his dress blues or whatever. So I mean, you can see how if you put up a front, she would have no idea what she's getting into.
Yeah. And she said as much. She said he was handsome. He had these gorgeous blue eyes that just drew her in, and he embodied everything she thought she wanted. Mm-hmm. John asked Lorena to dance and then later for her phone number. Lorena thought he was handsome and was immediately taken with him, saying in later testimony that he represented
everything
to her. John was the first man Lorena had ever dated. Because of her parents' conservative beliefs, however, these dates would not just be the two of them. For 10 months, John and Lorena dated, doing wholesome things like going for pizza and ice cream, all the while with a chaperone in attendance. Usually the chaperones were the Castro sisters, Emily and Mercedes, who reportedly disliked John from the very first time they met him. Those feelings didn't change as they watched their friend and John become more serious.
This makes me think of Seinfeld whenever Kramer is the chaperone for Jerry when he's dating the Miss America lady.
That's so great. And it's he takes it so seriously. And then he ends up getting with her.
That's right.
Because she appreciates. Is that the one where she had the birds and they leave them on the balcony?
And they dump the water and they drown the birds. And so she can't do her magic act. She's got to sing and she's terrible at singing. Yeah,
that was so, that's great.
Because she was chaperoned on these dates, Lorena was chaperoned on these dates, he couldn't show his true colors. So, of course, he's acting on his best behavior because he's got two people looking at him, watching him.
Mm-hmm. John drank heavily and would often forget his wallet on his dates with Lorena, meaning she usually ended up footing the bill. Lorena told the makers of the documentary, Lorena, that she now believes her friend saw something she wasn't able to at the time, as the giddiness of love was clouding her vision.
Girl, if he ain't paying for the check, go. You need to run.
And she's brand new to this country, making minimum wage as a manicurist. And this motherfucker's like, oh, I forgot my check. And the Castro sister said it would happen all the time. Like,
he needed a chain on his wallet with Janko jeans. So he wouldn't forget his wallet. When were wallet chains invented? He needed
one. I don't think he was forgetting his wallet. No. I think he was intentionally leaving it home, which again just shows like the lack of respect he had. Not that a man should always pay by any means.
Switch off.
But also just like that he expected she was going to pay. I'm going to ask her on a date. We're going to go out and do stuff that costs money. And then at the end, oops, she's going to have to pay for it.
Full well knowing that he didn't have his wallet the whole time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just no regard. Yeah. The type of, it's just a scumbag move.
Oh, scumbag is a nice word for him. 10 months after Lorena had begun dating John, he invited her to go swimming at the Olympic-sized pool located on the military base. As the two swam, John dipped below the water, swimming along the bottom of the pool. When he emerged, Lorena noticed he was holding something shiny between his fingers. John had found a woman's ring. It was gold and featured a small, delicate bow. Despite it clearly being someone else's ring that he simply happened upon, John used it to propose to Lorena right then and there, and she accepted.
So you just found some garbage at the bottom of the pool. You want to marry me, I guess?
Maybe somebody was coming back to look for that. I would.
Yeah, they went to the lost and found. They're like, did anyone find this ring? Oh, they found it. And then they gave it away to their betrothed.
Years later, someone is watching this documentary and they're like, that's my ring. I've just been looking for that for 25 years.
Son of a bitch.
That's crazy. Yeah, she said that he was like, well, you want to get married? And she said, well, only if you're serious. And he's like, yeah, I'm serious. I want to marry you. And so it just happened right then and there.
Again.
Red flag number two.
He proposing to you with found objects. Yeah. I don't understand. Not that I don't understand. It's another situation where what if there hadn't been a ring at the bottom of the pool? Like would they have gotten married? What if he proposed in front of the Castros? Would they have been like, say no, you know? But because they're alone, they're at the swimming pool, it just so happened.
Good point. The Castro's aunt is in the documentary and she says when she found out they were engaged, none of them could believe it. They were in shock. But that her parents were reportedly happy because he was an American. And it was part of this whole dream. This American dream is to marry like the, you know, classic American guy, which they thought he was.
Like a boy next door. I bet the Castros were shocked that he could afford a ring. They're like, he can afford a ring. He never pays for dinner. And she's like, oh, no, he found it. And they're like, oh, okay. That makes sense.
No, he found it at the bottom of a pool.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah. During an interview on the documentary Lorena, John recalls how his parents didn't want him to marry her, but rather let her return to Venezuela after her visa expired, saying that if she came back, it was truly meant to be. John, however, felt otherwise, and on June 18th, 1989, the couple were married in a small ceremony. That's also a very coded thing. Well, why don't you let her go back to her own country and we'll see if
what happens.
If she comes back. Yeah, but you don't need to keep her here just so she can get a green card. That was very much their attitude.
Don't let her visa expire. Go ahead and let her visa expire. Yeah, it's you can sort of tell that he later on, at least towards the end of the documentary, starts talking about women in general. Oh, my. Please, expert in women, John Wayne Bobbitt, tell us what you think about women. And he's like, you know, some of them are gold diggers and some of them are just trying to get their green cards. I mean, I'm just saying. And you're like, you're a shithead. Like,
yeah.
You can just tell his implication.
You've raped and beat multiple women. So I don't think you're allowed to say anything about women.
Yeah, you're not an expert on anything except being a douchebag.
Yeah. The newfound marital bliss between the couple would not last for long. John liked to drink a lot. Perhaps this was the reason he was unable to keep a job, leaving Lorena to be the sole breadwinner for the family with the paycheck she received from the nail salon. Shortly after their nuptials, the couple had purchased a modest house. Because Lorena was unable to make the house payments by herself, on March 24, 1992, the bank foreclosed on their home.
It was one of those where he didn't really ever get a reasonable job. You know, he was part-time at one thing, would get fired, would get kicked out, part-time in something else, wouldn't be able to keep up with it. And so she was the only steady source of income. And that's so demeaning for her to be like, well, now we have to get foreclosed because you don't make enough money. It's like, well, there's a perfectly capable, in theory, other person in this relationship that's not contributing. Like, he was like lousing around, wasting all their money on booze. And by virtue of that, it then causes them to like go into this financial hole that she's basically forced to dig out, and she can't. I mean, she's doing the best she can, but I mean, what are you going to do when you have somebody like that drinking all your money away?
Yeah, he was just a mooch, and I don't think he really had any desire to find like a steady job. He was content with just drinking all day and letting her go to work and bring home the bacon.
Mm-hmm. And he'd just fuck off with his friends.
Mm-hmm. Desperate to keep their house and belongings, Lorena made the decision to steal $7,000 from her place of employment. She would also shoplift dresses from Nordstrom's in an attempt to please her husband and avoid his verbal abuse, saying in later testimony,
"I stole from Nordstrom because he didn't like my dresses, and he always told me that I was ugly, and I wanted to be pretty for him."
Again, that is heartbreaking.
It's so sad. He just tore her down about everything, mind, body, and soul. I mean, he mocked her accent. He mocked her like her speaking ability. He mocked her figure, her body. She weighed like 92 pounds.
She was she was 5'2", 92 pounds.
She was itty bitty.
You breathe hard and she falls over.
And he was just like, "You're too big. You don't look ugly," everything. And so it drove her to it's massive repeated amounts of abuse to a person who's already vulnerable.
Yeah, and she said she wasn't telling anyone what was going on. She wasn't telling her family because she felt like this was her problem. And she was also embarrassed and she didn't want to worry her parents and everything. So she's taking all of this on herself in a brand new country where she's now speaks English, but there's still language barriers. It's still hard for her to like communicate with some people. And the one person that she thinks loves her, that she can trust and count on, is treating her like garbage.
Well, and also just in general, societal pressures are like, a man is in charge. The 90s were the kind of starting to be this turning point, but watching this documentary made me realize really how archaic some of the thoughts and beliefs were in the 90s. And we'll get into, you know, in the next episode about like the marital sexual assault and marital rape, but how it was just unfathomable. Even there was no federal funding, there were no resources. So you didn't, now, you know, you see a TV show or you watch one of these documentaries and it'll say like, here's the National Domestic Abuse Hotline. Well, they didn't have that back then. It wasn't readily available resources where if your husband is demeaning you verbally, that you know to label that, oh, I'm being verbally abused.
Right.
You're like, oh, he's just mad today.
Yeah,
I'll just have to get over it.
This is just how it is.
Yeah,
that's
there
just
was
John.
Mm-hmm.
A month after their wedding, Lorena, John, and John's brother Todd were driving home one night after spending the evening at a local bar. According to Lorena, John was driving drunk, speeding up to 90 miles per hour and dangerously zigzagging across the road. Lorena, fearing for their safety, pleaded for her husband to stop. Instead of slowing down, however, John responded to his wife by punching her hard in the chest, while his brother Todd nodded in approval from the back seat.
Couple of ways you can respond to your brother punching his wife in the chest. Nodding in approval? Not one of them.
No, no. And she says in the documentary, she's just sitting there sobbing, confused and terrified. And she just sees him nodding like, yeah, you did the right thing. Don't let her talk back to you. You're the man in the house.
Yeah, get her. Yeah.
When they arrived back at their apartment, Jean grabbed Lorena by the arm, drug her upstairs, and began to kick her once inside. She wept while Jean admonished her for crying. Upon hearing the commotion, neighbors called the police, who arrived on the scene shortly. While speaking with the documentary makers, Lorena recalled how shocked she was by her husband's complete transformation when answering the door for the cops. While just moments before he had been beating her and screaming at her, he now spoke to the police in a calm and collected manner.
She said it was so confusing that it was like a totally different person answered the door.
And that is very common in abusers.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is somebody that he fully knew what he was doing was wrong, because when you're faced with the police, you deny it and you say, everything's fine. It'd be one thing if he was so mad. It was like, yeah, slapped her right in the face. Okay, well, maybe he needs some coaching. But it's like, no, he knew what he was doing was fucking wrong, which is why he acted cool when the cops showed up.
Mm-hmm. He also knew that he could do that kind of stuff in front of his brother, and that was totally cool. They had the relationship where, like, this is how you treat women. This isn't weird. I know that he's not going to stand up to me or tell me this is wrong because he agrees with it and he thinks it's the right way to do it.
Well, I mean, then that's the family that they came from, that it was violence punished with violence. You know, when his dad beat the shit out of his mom, her brothers came over and beat the shit out of the dad. You know, so it was just, that's the response to everything in that family.
Despite John being the abuser, the police asked Lorena if she had anywhere she could go in order to de-escalate the situation. At the time, Lorena didn't have anyone she could turn to for help. But not wanting to stay at her house for fear of what John would do next, she got in her car and drove to the nail salon where she worked. That night, Lorena slept in her car, in the parking lot, a place far safer than her own bed at home.
You get the shit kicked out of you, and then you gotta drive to work because that you're so isolated from anybody else.
That's all she had. That's
and sleep in your car.
Yeah. Her coworkers and then the Castro family were the only people she knew.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you have to go. And again, because there were not resources, or at least they weren't advertised such that she knew about them, of a domestic violence shelter or a resource center or something like that. So you're just left to injured and crying in your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally alone. According to police reports, authorities were called to the Bobbitts' residence at least half a dozen times over the course of a few years. Friends reported seeing John aggressively grab Lorena by the arm, shove and push her into walls, and call her a bitch. Her boss and friend Jana said she would often see marks on Lorena's throat, rug burns on her arms, bruises on her back, and one time a bump on her head. At least once when police were called to the residence, John was arrested and charged with assault and battery after he bloodied Lorena's lip and left bruises and marks on her body. In addition to the physical abuse, Lorena was also being sexually assaulted and raped by her husband on a regular basis.
This was not a couple that you'll hear later. Some of the prosecutors, like, they weren't, neither of them were angels. You know, they got into a couple of tiffs. She weighed 92 pounds. You know, if she was hollering at him, he weighed almost 200 pounds of pretty solid muscle. I mean, throughout,
he was literally twice her size,
taller, a head taller than her, and just yanked her around like a rag doll. The photographs of her abuse, and it was prolonged, and there were witnesses. This isn't like, well, and a couple of times you'll hear them go, well, it was kind of a he said, she said. No, it was a she said, and there's photos. Like, this is provable, just prolonged, significant abuse.
It's horrifying.
Was maybe a footnote in any media mentions at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. No, the jokes and what happened to him trumped anything that had happened to her. She was a nobody in these trials.
He got off, honestly, the penis cutting off, which we're getting to, spoiler alert, he got off light for the years of just damage that he did to this woman. He was, it was but a scratch, as the Black Knight would say on Monty Python. It was, you know, it's just appalling the more you read about what really went on in the years leading up to this. I mean, and they weren't married very long, with 4 years, and it was constant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Constant.
It's nauseating. Her testimony in the documentary made me weep and physically ill.
I was so nervous. I had like the shakes.
Yeah, yeah. It's very yeah.
It makes
anxiety
you nervous.
Inducing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabe Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabe sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
On June 23, 1993, John came home late, drunk, as he was frequently. When Lorena rebuffed his sexual advances, John once again did something he had done multiple times before. He raped her. After years of dehumanizing treatment, Lorena felt it break loose. At 5:06 a.m., the Manassas City Police Department received a call that a male had been assaulted. According to the transcript of the 911 call, as shown on the documentary Lorena, the call went as follows.
Hello, this is dispatch.
Hi, this guy walked into Prince William Hospital. He was assaulted by his wife. Y'all need to send somebody over there.
Has he lost part of his body?
I don't know how much damage has been done. Evidently, quite a bit. Apparently, the hospital needs it ASAP. It needs it to salvage this man's dignity.
To salvage this man's dignity.
Yeah.
That's all anybody was caring about right
now. I mean, it was the crime scene investigator was a female, but from otherwise, all the other officers and lieutenants that they interviewed, I believe, were males. Correct me if I'm wrong.
From the documentary, that's how it appears.
That's what it appears. And it's one of those where we'd never heard of something like that. It was the worst thing we'd ever investigated. Really? Really is the worst thing?
Honestly, the first probably 20 minutes of the first episode, I was appalled at the callousness or just kind of flippant attitude and that all of the cops and former investigators had when talking about it. They were laughing.
To like, it was pretty wild.
Talking about, I didn't want to touch it. Neither did he. No, nobody wanted to touch it. We just stood there and pointed to where it was. It's like, it was a lack of professionalism. But then also, all you guys know, while this documentary is being filmed, why she did all of this.
Yeah.
So why is anyone joking about anything or laughing? Like, it's, again, it's like, it just became this punchline that his dick got cut off instead of that he was anally raping his wife and beating the shit out of her for
weekly,
years.
Weekly, if not nightly.
Yes.
I mean, it was bad, significant. And I'm like, you watch that and you're like, I know why you did it, girl. Good for you.
Yes. And a lot of women at the time were coming out and saying that. And she said she would get letters that was like, you finally did what we've all wanted to do for so long. And again, like, but those were so few and far between of the media attention
and the jokes
and the negative attention she was getting from everyone.
But imagine too, I mean, and now I guess, you know, with time, it's been 25 years or whatever, for those officers and kind of their demeanor and attitude that's kind of laughing about it. At the time, I imagine, I mean, aside from, you know, in the ER with him, people were like, you know, it was even back then. And so she, you know, you're at there talking to police officers and they're kind of like not taking you seriously or are painting you as just like she's crazy.
Yeah, just a psycho bitch.
Ladies, if you're ever starting to date a guy and you're like, hey, whatever happened to your ex-girlfriend? And he's like, she's crazy. False. That guy's fucked up. He did something to her.
Yeah. Again, that's when that's coded language.
It's coded language. You need to ask him, what'd you do to her? What did you do? Because you know he did something.
Yes. Well, in fact, John Bobbitt had lost part of his body. The it they referred to was the end of his penis. After years of emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, his wife, Lorena, had had enough. After her husband drunkenly raped her that night, like he had done so many times before, Lorena walked to the kitchen, grabbed a 7-inch long knife, went back to the bedroom, and sliced her husband's penis off.
There's a lot of images of the detached end, yep, as well as the stump that was left behind.
There is.
Very, very graphic. Haven't seen something that graphic since botched up bodies.
Lots of, and his was a botched up body.
Oh, yes.
Lots of images of the crime scene as well with the bed where it happened.
So much. But I will say, and I believe they said it in the documentary, that she made a very, they said it was no hesitation. It was a very one fail swoop.
No, she went in and didn't hesitate, which honestly, probably better for him.
Yes. You don't want a sawing situation.
Yes. According to the dispatch operator, law enforcement officials were hesitant to include the detail about the penis on the actual call because the news media monitored the channels. The dispatcher and officers feared the news would hear and the story would spread like wildfire. At the time, because officers did not have cell phones, everything they had to communicate was done over the police radios, channels that could be heard by third parties. Nevertheless, the search was on for the severed appendage as law enforcement rushed to find the penis and deliver it to the waiting doctors at the hospital. Cecil Dean, one of the crime scene technicians, told the makers of the documentary what he saw when he visited John at the hospital before he was treated.
I saw a man's testicles or a scrotum without the penis. It was cut very clean.
He's almost impressed.
I'm at a loss for words, honestly. I'm trying to imagine that whole hospital room scene.
They showed the photos because he's laid back on a bed, and they said when he came in, he had his hand in his crotch holding the.
He was walking?
Yes. He walked up to the door, and they put him in a wheelchair, and so he's mashing on his lap with like a fabric, and of course it's a lot of blood. I mean, he's bleeding a lot, and his friend is pushing him, and the doctor said, oh my gosh, what did you do to your hand? Because she assumed that he had cut his hand, and of course, you know, you lift it up and it's worst case scenario underneath that blanket.
That's not what any of them thought they were gonna see that night.
No
But also, he was so drunk that he probably could walk. He was a bit numbed from the pain time.
I think that was part of it. And part of the blood loss, too.
Yeah. One of the surgeons on call that night, Dr. David Berman, a microsurgeon, received a late-night call to perform an operation on John. Dr. Berman told the physicians who called him,
if you can't find it, I can't put it back on.
Dr. James Seen, the urologist who saw John in the ER, told filmmakers that John had lost about a third of his blood. Dr. Seen said that without the penis to reattach, they would have to do a procedure called a perineal urethrostomy. The operation involves connecting his urethra so that John could, as Dr. Seen said,
sit to pee like a woman
the rest of his life.
Can I just say, super burn on him that you come in with an injury and they're like, we have to call the microsurgeon.
He's like, well, I'm going to make him sit to pee like a woman then. If you guys can't find this thing, joke's on you. Also, I sit to pee like a woman every day. It's fine.
It's fine. It's
lovely. Great. You get to relax.
No muss, no fuss.
Honestly, if I had to stand, sitting is a nice break in the day where you can relax, pull out your phone.
Give it a nice.
Just take a load off for a second. Put a load in, maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows what's going to happen? During John's interview for the documentary, he recalled that night in hazy details.
I don't remember too much. I just remember her playing around with me while I was sleeping.
According to archival interview footage, he remembered Lorena putting her arms around him. Then there was a small pull and a clean cut. He told the interviewer,
It was horrifying. It was terrifying. I was confused. I thought Freddy Krueger's hand came through the wall. I was bleeding everywhere. All I could think was, like, I should not go back to sleep.
Luckily for John, his friend Robbie was staying with the Bobbitts that night. John woke Robbie up for help. However, Robbie was confused and still sleepy, and took time to stop and brush his teeth before driving John to the hospital.
They were both wasted. I mean, he talks about...
Totally.
He wakes up in a pool of blood and is like, oh, man, I wonder what's going... Oh, my God, I'm bleeding a lot. Huh. Man, I shouldn't fall asleep. You know what I mean? It's like he was just so shit-faced.
Yeah. And then his friend is so shit-faced that he doesn't even understand the severity of the situation and decides, you know what? I need to brush my teeth before... Also, he's shit-faced and driving.
Oh, yeah. With his friend bleeding in the back seat, yeah. Or in the passenger seat.
He did. Most of us, if we woke up and had an appendage missing, would just call 911.
Immediately. Yes. Yeah. I woke up with a broken ankle and not called 911, and they said, it will be $600 to drive you 3 blocks to the hospital. And I was like, oh, we'll take a cab. Thank you. Please go.
I woke up with a severely sprained ankle. And we say woke up like this happened to us while we were sleeping.
Oh, no. I did a keg stand.
I drunkenly fell off a porch and then went to sleep. And then the next morning woke up and was like, you know what? I think my ankle's broken. I had to be taken to urgent care.
Exactly what happened. I woke up, and again, it was because I was wearing espadrille sandals, like high wedges, with ankle straps. And
I've been not good drinking shoes.
No, they're not good drinking shoes. And I was lifted to do a keg stand on a boat, on a moving boat. And then my feet were put down, and on the put down, I think I rolled my ankle, or like the ankle strap,
yeah,
crunched me. So I had to put my foot in a. I mean, I had like a cast on it, but then I wrapped it in bubble wrap too.
Why?
Just because I was bumping into stuff, and then I was having my employees at Sea Dog push me around in a rolly chair like an office chair.
Did you have crutches? I had to have crutches.
I did. I had crutches, but then I preferred the rolly chair.
Oh, I was working at the airport at the time and had no one to roll me anywhere, and I had to walk. Or I had to crutch myself with these crutches all the way. It's at DFW Airport.
That's the hugest airport.
Yes. Parking, going through security still, and then going all the way down the terminal to get to where I was working.
Where did you work at the airport?
At a winery.
That's so cool.
I worked for a series of wineries, and one of them was there. But so sometimes I would have to go over there and do stuff. But it was – you couldn't pick a worse place to work when you have a broken ankle.
Well, and that's why I worked at Navy Pier, and our booth was about halfway down Navy Pier, and it's so far. And so I would say, hey, I'm at the front at the bus stop. Come bring a rolly chair and roll me down.
And they roll you down?
Yeah, it was very nice.
I wish I had somebody to roll me down that terminal. That would have been great. That
would have been hilarious.
Yeah, also, yeah. Well, soon crime scene technicians and police officers were swarming Maplewood Park apartments on Maplewood Drive. One of those technicians, Cindy Leo, was initially told that Lorena had possibly swallowed the penis. However, that was not the case. In the Lorena documentary, Cindy walked the film crew through what she had found that fateful morning. On the outside of the unit, there were blood droplets coming down from apartment number 5, down the stairs and into the parking lot. Inside the apartment, there were blood droplets going through the living room and into a bedroom on the left-hand side of the unit, the scene of the crime. Swallowed it?
Yes, for some reason that was, again, it must be, I don't know if it was like a joke on the radio. They're like, oh, no, she probably ate it. And then it gets around like, well, she ate it. She ate the penis. We can't find it. Yeah, that was.
I just want to say, how are you going to get that down? That's not like taking a pill. That's like,
no.
That's. Like swallowing a dick. How are you going to cut? I mean, that is like, that's so insane to me.
Swallowing the dick is like swallowing a dick. I will say at the Beetle House in Los Angeles, they do that place that I went, that's the Tim Burton themed restaurant. They did a circus act in the middle of it. And a woman, instead of swallowing swords, was swallowing the types of long balloons that you would normally use to do balloon animals. She was just like, aww. And I thought, man, your whole entire throat is plugged up.
Although, yeah. The balloon, she would actually swallow the balloons?
Oh, it went way down in there. And then she'd pop it and pull the tube part out.
Oh, okay. So it didn't like, the deflated balloon wasn't inside of her body at the end
of
it.
She pulled it out at the end. The deflated.
Damn.
Yeah, it seems dangerous.
You know some pieces are getting off in her tum-tum,
for sure.
Though.
You're going to dump it out and look down. There's blue latex everywhere.
I don't understand how people can do that. I have such a gag reflex.
Yeah, it's... It was impressive, frankly. I mean, I put money in the tip bucket. I was like, well, I can't do that.
No, I mean, that is, yeah, she's got a talent. Few of us do.
You know what? If you got a talent, you get to show it off. But I think that would be the ultimate revenge if she would have swallowed it, because the stomach acid would have eaten it up.
And then, I mean,
but then there's raw meat. You're not
supposed to wait 3 days for her to shit it out and then reattach a shit penis.
Well, I don't think you can reattach that. I think it'd be all mashed up.
It's gone. It's meat.
It's hard enough for me to swallow a vitamin whole. You know, she'd have to chew it up.
Yeah. I can't do vitamins like that. Those big horse vitamins.
Oh, big old chunkos.
No.
They're bad.
Officer John Tillman arrived on scene and was forced to balance the time-sensitive search for the penis with wanting to maintain the crime scene. He noticed that the bed had a blood stain on it, about an inch deep full of blood. According to reports, John was
extremely intoxicated,
which led him to laying on the bed for some time after the member was cut off. Officers didn't find the penis in the house after searching the sink, the garbage disposal, the freezer, and the trash can.
Yeah, that's where they went first. They were searching the kitchen to try to see where she would have disposed of it.
Hypothetically, you cut off a dick. Yes. What room in the house are you going to dispose of this? Are you going to the kitchen?
No, I would flush it down the toilet.
I was thinking flush it down the toilet, too.
Like a tampon.
Well, that's a hell of a tampon.
Yeah, it'd be a big one.
Also, on the documentary, one of the investigators says he opened up the dishwasher to look in there.
Do you think she cleaned it off? Do you think she wanted
run it through the dishwasher?
She was like, I washed your dirty dick for you. Open the dishwasher.
The garbage disposal, while stomach churning, is also not a bad idea.
That's a pretty good idea.
If you're trying to get rid of it.
And if you're trying to be mean about it and really chomp it up so you can never put it back.
Yeah. Well, flushing it, too. They're not going to get that back.
Sure, I guess unless you get the Roto-Rooter man out.
Honestly, he got, as we'll see, the best possible solution to this whole thing. Correct. Because most women would not have just given it back or told them where it was.
And we can get in part two, my theories on the defense. I think this is speaks to state of mind.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Well, however, officers did find pamphlets regarding rape, spousal protection, and domestic violence sitting on a nearby coffee table. Later that morning, Lorena went to the police station and reported the sexual abuse and domestic violence that she had suffered for years, including the spousal rape to which she had been repeatedly subjected. The officer on duty let her know that while they would take her statement, that other officers were still searching for the penis and a lieutenant on duty would be coming by to question her.
Yeah, it was kind of, I mean, I guess it's hard for this local police department, and then you'll see the prosecutor's office, because they're kind of on two cases at the same time, and there's victims and perpetrators in both scenarios, and they have what here is a rape victim. I mean, they have a rape victim here that they're also treating as a perp.
Yeah, yes, it's quite a conundrum. Lorena told officers that she remembered having her hands full while trying to drive and tossing something out of the window. When Amy Chozick of the New York Times asked Lorena why she threw the appendage away, Lorena replied,
I tried to drive the car, obviously, but I had this thing in my hand, so I couldn't drive, so I got rid of it.
Sounds logical.
I mean, it makes sense. Think about how if you have a knife in one hand and a stump of penis end in the other hand, I mean, you're going with your knees at that point. That'd like me going, driving down the road eating a taco.
You also got to put the knife down. I think both those things need to be disposed of.
I guess you could put it in the passenger seat, but the penis may leave a stain depending if it's leather interior or fabric. True.
But again, I don't think she was even in her right state of mind to know what was going on. So
not
she
at all.
Was just almost like blackout.
That's what I'm saying. I think if it was premeditated and she would have grounded up in the in the disposal or flushed it or smashed
or buried
whatever,
it or something. Yeah,
it was very like not even thinking, totally out of her head, just kind of fuck it,
yeah,
just throw it out the window.
Yeah. The officer asked Lorena where she threw it. She told the New York Times,
"I'm not a vindictive person because I told them where it was."
Officers searched the area that Lorena had directed them to. And there they found it, in the knee-high grass, John Wayne Bobbitt's detached penis. They rushed to the 7-Eleven right across the street, put it in a Big Bite hot dog box on some ice, and took it to the hospital, according to the New York Times.
Guess what I saw walking my dogs today?
A Big Bite hot dog box?
Yes. I started laughing, and I was like, I gotta take a photo of this.
Was there a dick inside?
From what I could see, there was not. But it was, if someone were to toss a dick into this grass, there's a hot dog box right there. It's very convenient.
Also, she honestly is not, her statement of, I'm not vindictive, I told them where it was, is very true. Because most women would be like, I don't know where I threw it. Good luck finding it. And then that's a needle in a haystack. That's a dick in Manassas. That should be the new needle in a haystack.
It's a dick in knee-high grass. You are never going
to
find it.
You're never going to find it. They wouldn't begin to know where to look. So it would just... And then some possum stumbles upon it.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah. And so she didn't have to do that.
No.
And I mean, she was very nice to have done that.
And also, back then, there's not like cell phones, so they couldn't say, okay, well, we pinged your phone and we know you drove here, here, and here. And plus, she said, I kind of don't really know where I was driving to.
Yeah, she was just mindlessly driving. The lieutenant on duty asked Lorena what happened. Amongst her statements to police, she complained that John did not satisfy her sexually, saying,
he always have orgasm and he doesn't wait for me to have orgasm. He's selfish. I don't think it's fair. So I pulled back the sheets and then I did it.
And that statement kind of comes back to bite her later.
Yes, but it's used against her repeatedly.
Yeah. And, she shortly after reported all the rape and abuse that she was suffering. I think she was not even thinking and was just saying anything that came to mind. She may also, before she goes to speak to her boss, she might not have wanted to disclose any of what was going on because, again, she was embarrassed. This is a shameful thing that was happening to her and to so many women. And you have this male officer questioning you about why you did this. And what do you say?
Well, and I also wonder if she was not equipped for the term I was raped. It wasn't even on the stand. She never says. I have to go back and watch it. Of course, I'm only watching the parts that are in the Lorena documentary. But she would say, "Oh, he comes in and has sex with me."
She would say, "He did it. He did it."
And then he did it. You know what I mean? So this could be a situation where they're like, "What exactly happened?" She's like, "Well, he holds me down and he has orgasm, but I don't because I'm not enjoying it."
Yeah.
And this is kind of what happened. The media sort of took this, and then of course the prosecution. I got a lot of takes on the prosecutor, good and bad. But this line of testimony was then used to almost say, oh, well, she was just a woman scorned. She was so mad. And you never stop to think this could be a person who is not linguistically equipped with the jargon to say, I was raped. And all you know how to do is say, well, he comes in, he has sex with me, he has an orgasm, I don't have one, and so I had to fight back. And she doesn't have the exact word for it.
There's a language barrier.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sure she knows what rape is, but to her, this is her husband. And again, because of the times, some states didn't even recognize marital rape. It was, if that's your wife, then it's not rape. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's not from here. There's already a language barrier. And then she's like, well, it couldn't be rape because I'm married to him. Well, so and if you, how do you describe that, you know?
And she has a religious background where you think, okay, the female is submissive, the male is dominant. If he wants, I'm his property, I'm his wife, yeah. You know, because there's a lot of that kind of language in religious scripture that, you know, she may think, okay, well, I have to go with it.
Yeah. And they're also, after their house went into foreclosure, they split up for a while, for about a year. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up getting back together. And throughout that time, they were still, like, obviously arguing everything. And John claims that he said, I'm leaving you. This is it. We're done. Right. I'm getting a divorce. And that's why she did all of this. But I don't buy that. I mean, I don't buy anything that sack of shit says.
He has repeatedly raped people and lied about it. And every single thing that he has done, he has found a way to explain it that it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
He beats the shit out of this woman, leaves all these bruises and goes, oh my God, well, she was fighting me. And so I had to fight back. Bullshit.
Yeah. You as a 200-pound, 6'2" man had to fight back against this. She's the size of like
a child,
a fifth grader. Yes. Yeah. She's so small.
As my Uncle Jerry would say, don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Don't say, oh, yeah. My God, I just had to. Bullsh. No. Uh-uh.
And it seems like that was kind of the whole family's mentality. Because he would say, well, it's just like my mama said that if she couldn't have me, nobody could. And, you know, I didn't think about it at the time. But then people reminded me, like, well, she's just in it for the green card because she didn't want to go back. And so all these people in his life were just feeding him this information. Mm-hmm. Like, so he's being told from every angle, like, you didn't do anything wrong. You couldn't do anything wrong. You're completely blameless in this. And his brother, who has seen him beat the shit out of her and was clapping his hands about it, like, of course no one's going to say anything wrong was going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a person that has no personal responsibility for,
no,
as we will see too in the next episode, for any of the bullshit he's done beyond this too.
Right. Yeah. She told officers after she threw the organ out the window. She then went to her work and
nobody was there.
After leaving the store, she went to see her friend and boss, Jana. Lorena stood outside, knocking and crying, until Jana's husband finally came to the door. In an archival interview with Jana, she explained how Lorena told her that she had, in fact, cut John's penis off.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't deny it at all.
No.
Yeah. She
was very complicit with the police and agreeable and helpful even.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
She went to the bathroom after he raped her and fell asleep to the kitchen to get a cup of water, saw this knife and just mentally snapped.
Uh-huh. I think
so. It wasn't premeditated or anything like that. And so then, like you said, all of this afterwards shows it wasn't premeditated. If you're not going to agree to tell the police where it is, you're not going to just randomly drive around and go tell people. You'd have a plan of how to make sure that you didn't get caught
and get out of it. I think, yeah, mm-hmm. It was like a shining beacon on the kitchen counter of her, like, oh, that will solve all of my problems.
Yeah. Also, she could have just stabbed him in the heart.
Yeah, she could have slit his throat.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you see this penis as a symbol of fear, the thing that damages you and mm-hmm. attacks you all the time. And you're like, well, it's just laying there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The knife and the penis.
Lorena also let officers know that she left the knife at her job, the nail sculptor, in a garbage can behind the building. CSI Cindy Leo had to race against time to get to the can before the city garbage collectors, who were poised to empty out the can as it was trash day. Photos showed the knife exactly where Lorena had left it, in the garbage can, lying on top of a discarded KFC box.
It's just one of those things where it's just such an agent of destruction, and it's lying limply in a garbage pile. Yeah,
covered in blood.
Oh, yeah.
Atop a bunch of delicious KFC greasy chicken boxes.
And Cindy Leo says that she's climbing in the garbage, and then someone sees her, and she climbs out, and she's got this knife in her hand. And they're like, get what you needed? She's like, uh-huh. I'm like, yeah. Oh, no, thanks, bye. Yeah.
What a job.
I know, man.
L-E-G-E-N-D-Z.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabay Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabay sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
John Wayne Bobbitt underwent a 9.5-hour surgery under the steady hands of a urologist and a plastic surgeon to reattach his organ. The big question was, would it still work? According to the New York Times, the member was reattached with almost full function. For 2 months after the surgery, John was fitted with a catheter, as that was the only way he could urinate until his penis had finally healed.
I think everybody was sort of seedily wondering, you know, it is the question on people's minds.
100%. And even Jordan Peele is the executive producer of this documentary. And I read this article that when he first decided to make it, he even approached Lorena and was like, you know, there was then and there is now this like kind of comedy thing surrounding it, this dark comedy. It's like a Coen Brothers film almost. Like, are you going to be okay with like some of that coming out in this documentary? Because the reality is a bunch of cops are running around looking for a severed dick.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, like, there is this sense absurd. Of just absurd, and it's just incredulous. But then when you peel back, like, the first reaction of, oh my God, his dick got cut off, and start to think, why? What was going on with her? It nothing funny about it at that point.
No. And especially a lot of the depictions of her where the accents are just beyond
it's
caricature.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, she was labeled a crazy psychotic bitch, a hot Latin immigrant. Again, all these coded words like hot Latina woman and everything.
Hot-blooded, yeah.
Yeah. She just was like this woman scorned. And like she says, like, nobody cared why I did it. They just cared that it happened because it was this dark taboo thing that was unthinkable. Like, she took his manhood, the thing that men care most about. On Jenny Jones, they show in the documentary, John and his brother are both on it. And she's like, so you, John, or Todd, you went out looking for Lorena after she did it, right? And he's like, yeah. I was going to kill the bitch. And men in the audience start applauding.
Fuck you.
It's crazy. Ugh. And he's like, she took the one thing that makes a man, the one thing that we care most about, our manlyhood. I'm like, first of all, if the thing you care most about is your dick, you're not a man at all. You're just a sack of shit. There's a lot. And stop being this man-woman thing. Be people.
Yeah, like, you're a human being who hurt another human being, who backed another human being into a corner so that they thought this was their only way out.
Yes.
You know, where you tell them, you'll never escape me. I'll fuck you wherever I want to, whenever I want to.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, what's he going to do that with? Oh, his dick? Well, not anymore.
Yeah. And again, had this been reversed and he cut off her clit or a breast or anything, no one would be making these jokes.
No, it would not have been a hilarious headline. I don't think, you know, she would have been called on Howard Stern to chat about what had happened.
First of all, and we'll get to it in the second episode, I'm ashamed of myself for how much I used to like Howard Stern in high school.
100%.
Because he is be a disgusting sack of shit. And I'll go on record saying that. Oh, especially after the shit he says about her and the stuff he does with John Wayne Bobbitt. He's horrible. He's a horrible man.
Watching that documentary and the footage, it's one of those where, you know, it's not that someone has framed his participation in this whole thing incorrectly or unfairly. It is video and audio footage of him saying some of the worst, most sexist bullshit. And honestly, I don't think it was a bit. I don't think it was an act. And I agree. I feel like an asshole because when I was in high school, I would watch the video version of it on E!
Yep, same. I listened to his radio show every morning with my best friend on the way to school.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it back then. And yeah. You listen to it now and you go, oh, you're deranged. Like, mm-hmm. If he were someone that was performing, and I don't have Sirius XM or whatever, and I don't listen, you know, I don't listen to that, but who knows? He may still be as shitty as he was back then. But it's one of those, I think if someone came out now and said, oh, I'm sure you didn't rape her because she's too ugly, which is something that he says.
Yeah, quote.
Almost verbatim. I don't think she was that good looking.
Yeah, I don't even think he raped her. She wasn't even that good looking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so things like that. And you're like, that's some shit. I don't even know that Rush Limbaugh would say something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like beyond what is acceptable. And I think a lot of times when you hear particularly cisgender, heterosexual, white male comics say, well, you know, we used to be able to say whatever we wanted. You're like, yeah, whatever you wanted was garbage and you can't say that anymore. Yeah. Or by all means, say that and then we'll know you're a dickhead and we won't have to talk to you anymore.
You can still say whatever you want. Just luckily, there's a lot of repercussions now if you do.
Yes, I was like, there's such a thing as freedom of speech, but there's no such thing as freedom from consequences.
Yes, I totally agree. The 90s were wild, man. Dude. I mean, that's when I was in high school. I graduated in 97. So, like, you know, I was in high school and I mean, I love Seinfeld and mm-hmm. I love Friends and everything. But sometimes when you watch some even episodes of like sitcoms back, you're like, good God.
Some of Friends does not hold up.
Oh, no, it does not. There is a lot of
yikes
moments in there for sure.
Yeah.
I was watching, I mean, even in Seinfeld, there's some racial stuff that I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this wouldn't be on the TV now.
And I think at least Seinfeld is similar to, like, Always Sunny, where the character's doing stuff, they are abhorrent, and so it makes sense that they would say abhorrent things. But Friends, they're all kind of, like, supposed to be, like, nice, sunny people, and they say some pretty... I mean,
there's some stuff.
It was on a random tangent. Back in the 90s, I loved Real World and Road Rules.
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
The Real World Road Rules Challenge. And I just watched some stand-up from Theo Vaughn, who was on Real World Road Rules Challenge. He's a very funny stand-up.
Which one was Theo?
Theo, he's from Louisiana, and he has
I remember.
He looks like he could be Bill Paxton's son.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Was he Theo? He kind of have like a gap in his teeth.
Yes, yeah, he looks like Bill Paxton's kid.
Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about. He was a good one.
A section on his it's Roy Wood Jr.'s show on Comedy Central, and he did about a 20-minute set. It was very funny. I'm like, hey, good for you. I also saw The Miz perform.
Oh, that's where he got that character.
That's
was
right.
From Road
and
Rules.
The Miz again. It's one of those where you go, hey, good for you. You got to be what you want to be when you grow up.
Yeah, he did. And he's a really nice guy. From all that I know and everything. But yeah, that was the character he would do when
on
he would
Miz,
get drunk.
Yes.
The Miz would come out. Yes. But he also had always said on the show, like, my dream is to be a professional wrestler.
I love it.
And then they WWE contacted him, and he is.
He's a star.
Insanely successful. Yeah.
He is a superstar. I wonder what happened to that one guy in Real World. I think he was on the New Orleans cast and he played the keyboard and he was like, shabadoon, dabadee, babu-da-bu-da. You remember that guy?
Yeah. I loved Real World. I auditioned for that.
Did you really?
An audition tape. Yeah.
It was
so lame.
No.
So
I was
lame.
So sad I couldn't be on it. But I could maybe now.
Why couldn't you be on it?
Because I was
of your age.
I was in maybe ninth.
I'm so glad I wasn't on it.
That's true.
Jesus Christ! I'd never want a camera crew following me around, especially at 22 years old.
Ooh, yeah,
no,
that's true.
Thank you.
Full regret.
I think I've seen every Real World. Maybe like I don't know if they still do it. I don't think they do.
Hot opinion.
The last couple seasons I didn't see, but. I loved Road Rules and the challenges. I've always liked reality TV.
Yeah, I remember back then I liked the Road Rules challenges, but
just real world is like the rural juror. It's hard to say.
Real world, yeah. Real world. You just kind of go blah, 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 blah.
But
yeah.
The 90s were a different time. And if you go and watch this Lorena documentary, you might vomit when you see some of the clips.
Yeah. Like I said, the first about 30 minutes of the first one is just a lot of clips of daytime talk shows where you're like, how was this allowed on the air?
It is shocking, frankly.
It is.
Joshua Rafe, I don't know how to say his name, Roth, the one that was the director of this, he basically says on a Vanity Fair interview, if Howard Stern doesn't come out and apologize after this, he's a bigger douchebag than any of us ever thought. And I think it's been about a year and I don't think he said anything that I could find.
I bet he's dug in.
Yeah, he don't give a shit.
Well, with arrests made and charges filed against both the Bobbitts, multiple trials loomed ahead. First up would be John's on the charge of marital sexual assault. A few weeks later, Lorena's would take place, where she would stand trial for malicious wounding of her husband. Journalists, comedians, and even locals of Manassas were having a field day with the headlines and profiting off cheap jokes and trashy merchandise. But the media circus surrounding this story was only just beginning.
Yeah, God, those t-shirts.
My God. And in the archival footage of the locals selling those t-shirts, just laughing about it. Like, well, we thought this is exciting. This is the biggest thing this town's seen since the Civil War. So we're going to go down there and sell these t-shirts that say, like, Manassas, a cut above the rest.
Yeah, and there's a knife, like, with blood on it. Yeah.
And it's like, can you imagine going to the courthouse every day and you see people, vendors, like it's a fair.
Yes.
Set up, selling t-shirts, selling sausages on a stick and, you know, all this just like disgusting stuff. And you're like, well, we're here because he was raping me and beating the shit out of me for years. But cool, if you guys want to make a couple bucks off this
hilarious
trash,
t-shirts.
Yeah, go right ahead. God. I can't imagine what this poor woman was going through. And at no point that I've seen in the documentary, and this is not to say fault her parents, but like she didn't have family there.
Yeah, it took a while for them to come up to be with her just because of finances.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, her boss was there. Jana was kind of her confidant and one that kind of guided her. Like, you need to get a lawyer. You need to get someone to handle all the media requests you're getting. So they can't just like run things that you say and all the news headlines whenever they want to and everything. So she kind of like guided her. And that was really all she had. And her lawyers.
And it took a while, but then there was a community organizer in the Latino community that brought together basically people from Mexico, Central America, South America. Basically, the Spanish-speaking community came out holding signs, holding up pictures of Jesus and stuff, and saying, we support you, we're here for you, because they kind of understood that this was a person who was scared of her immigration status, not able to maybe fully verbalize what was happening to her, and needed that community of support, and they would stand outside. Like I said, of course, it took a while, and it was by the time of the trial, but kind of stand outside and hold up signs, and she said, you know, that meant the world to me just to see him on that day that they finally came out. But it was
that she knew she had people on her in her corner,
somebody that wasn't just making fun of you on late night TV.
Yeah. Well, so what do we think about what's happened so far?
I think the media maybe didn't give us the full story.
Yeah, I certainly don't think so. This is, of all the stories we've done, this is one of the most shocking as far as just how much the media left out about what was really going on.
Completely biased, unfair, salacious mishandling of the story. Yeah.
In OJ, it was fairly well known that Nicole was being beat and everything.
Yes.
That was you'll hear from time and time again in the documentary, feminist groups and even lawyers and everything saying no one really talked about the fact that she was getting raped and beat. That was like just like you said, a footnote in all of these things. Like David Letterman did a top 10 of like why she did it, you know, and would call her his girlfriend. And
yeah,
it was just
did not age well.
No, yeah. It does not. And I hope that all of those comedians see this, because this came out in just last year.
Mm-hmm.
And see, like, man, I need to personally apologize to her.
Yeah, I fucked up. I didn't know what I was doing. And honestly, too, like, the editors of the time were predominantly male and basically said, mm-hmm. we are not interested in that angle. That's not the interesting angle. And Joshua Roffey, or I'll figure out how to say his name. Apologize. It's R-O-F-E with an accent over it. He got the idea for this documentary from reading the Huffington Post article, which we'll put in the show notes, that the headline is basically, after 25 years, Lorena Bobbitt's tired of being your punchline. And mm-hmm. he said he read that and was appalled at the handling of this case and basically called her up and said, hey, I want to tell the story, focusing on the right thing, which is exactly what you said. People always said what I did. Nobody asked me why I did it. And he's like, I want to focus on why you did it. And the documentary also goes into the legal climate at the time and the changing of the marital rape laws. They're also in the process of Orrin Hatch and Joe Biden were co-sponsoring the Violence Against Women Act, which recently is no longer in effect and unfortunately has lost some funding. So we'll go into that in the next episode. But important changes.
This was also during the time of Anita Hill
yes.
and Clarence Thomas.
Yes.
And then it happened not too much before the OJ case.
Yes.
Tonya Harding happened right around this time, too.
And that's what they said.
A lot of crazy trials in the 90s.
And that Tonya Harding pretty much knocked this from the headlines.
Yeah, this is why people stopped talking about this, because the Tonya Harding thing started mm-hmm. to happen.
I will tell you one thing I found on Amazon Prime that was so bad that Paris was like, you have to turn this off. It was Julie Brown, the comedian, doing it's an hour and a half long movie, and it's 2 45-minute halves, and one half is her being Tonya Harding and I guess doing a parody reenactment, and the second half is her dressed as Lorena Bobbitt doing a very offensive Latina accent and making just dick.
Is there an audience?
It's a movie, so it's like a parody film.
So there's other people in this.
Correct. Yes. It's not like a one woman show. It was rough. It was very. It's called Attack of the 5'2" Women.
Was it pro them or just? It sounds like it was very.
The description is: Spoofmeister Julie Brown does a musical send up of Tonya Harding and Lorena.
Oh, a musical.
Oh, yes. And Lorena Bobbitt's debutante debacles. The cover has her dressed as both characters, and the Lorena Bobbitt says, slice, she went for the jewels. And then the Tonya Harding says, whack, she went for the gold. It's.
Every time I see something like that, I just ask myself, how did this get greenlit?
Yeah, it's National Lampoon's Attack of the 5'2" Women, premiered Sunday, August 21st on Showtime. So it was like a Showtime made for TV parody film.
Well, she needs to also send a formal apology.
Oh, yeah. It's available on Amazon Prime, and I could. The review on IMDb is seriously now. It's embarrassingly badly made. But yeah, it's one of those where at the time, someone spent time, money, effort in mocking a rape victim, an abuse victim's pain.
Well, we will get into the trials. There are several of them, and even more details of all of the abuse that she endured in the next episode. And then what happened after? Career path that John decided to take
illustrious
for a while.
Career, yeah.
Good and Lord.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think she's ended up with a pretty happy, you know, happily ever after. But man, it was a bumpy road to get there. And especially the trial and stuff. So we'll look forward to bringing you that next week.
Absolutely. We love providing Sinisterhood to you at no cost, so if you like what you hear, consider supporting the show by donating to our Patreon. We are a small operation, creating the show for you by researching, writing, recording, and producing it ourselves. Any amount is sincerely appreciated and helps offset the cost of making and hosting the show.
As a thank you, you'll also get some sweet perks like a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group for those in the Ruling the Airwaves tier, a special shout out on the show, a monthly bonus minisode, and patron exclusive audio and video content like our weekly mix bags where we share three of our favorite things of the week. For more details on specific membership tiers, visit Sinisterhood.com and click on Patreon in the top right corner to join today.
And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pictures of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Keep those pictures coming. If you want to get some cool Sinisterhood swag like t-shirts, mugs, totes, and even clothes for your kiddos, visit Sinisterhood.com and click on shop in the top right corner.
We also have a brand new shirt up, which we are very excited about.
New shirt dropping. It's a Donna Laser and the Meat Warlocks World Tour shirt.
Yes. If you've listened to episode 83, Pazuzu Algarod and the Meat Warlock, you will understand the reference. If you haven't, go listen to it because it's one of our favorite ones we've ever done. And we laugh a whole lot.
So good.
And so good. The shirt is designed by the amazing Jude Sutton. You can follow him on Instagram at Day Off. It's DayYYYOFFF. He is a really rad artist. He has a store, tons of cool stuff. He's way hipper than I am.
He's one of the coolest people I follow on Instagram.
he's super cool.
Freaking love his page. Every time I go on there, pretty much everything he posts, I love and relate to.
It's great.
And also, for the month of April, 100% of profits from any merch sales will go to the World Health Organization COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund.
The best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy, where are you at?
I'm on Twitter at Christy or GTFO and on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather?
I'm on Instagram at Heather versus the World and on Twitter at MCK versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Thanks so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts.
Whitney Davis. We're so sorry we pronounced your name wrong last week.
Leah Cook.
Roxy Silver.
Alexandra Gibson.
Rachel Kanzierski.
Arissa Reyes.
Joanna Marsh.
Hope Bell.
Danielle Vellett.
Kayla.
Elise Compton.
Megan Pulliam.
Christina Green.
Rachel Carroll.
Adele Holiday.
Melinda Christine McKinley.
Brianna Cheka.
Caitlin Buenger.
Morgan Gillenwater.
Scarlett Black.
Jazz.
Sierra Zagari.
Jenna Blackburn Lucy.
James Adazinski.
Kayla Cummings.
Leah McComb.
Ryan Price.
Stephanie Pahari.
Whitney Goddard.
Hannah Smith.
Emily Catlett.
Emily.
Good Witch Knits.
Allison McCartney.
And Ruby Carrasco. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We love you and appreciate everything you do. Keep it creepy.
Wahahaha.
Sinister.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at LEGENDZ.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At WashableSofas.com, you'll find the Anabe Sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.